Welcome to the Dementia Research Project. I'm Matt DeRay, and in this podcast, I explore the history, innovation, and champions in and around the world of dementia.
Eloy van Hel is a co-founder of the Hokkawik, Netherlands' pioneering dementia village. With over 20 years of experience in elderly and dementia care, Eloy brings deep experience and expertise in innovative community-based care concepts from around the world. Eloy, thank you so much for your time. How are you?
You're welcome. I'm fine, busy but fine.
When I first came across the Hokkawik, it seemed like an amazing concept, and it made me think, how come there's not, I haven't seen more of this around the world. And the more I researched, the more I knew I needed to speak with you. First things first, do you mind sharing a bit about your journey leading up to founding the Hokkawik?
Yes, of course, Matthew. This whole story started already 30 years ago, so a long time ago, where we, the Hokkawik or Hokkawik, the nursing home, we were a more traditional institutional organization. But we were not happy, we were not proud about the care we delivered, and we wanted to change that. So we said, what do we want? And we said to each other, if we need complex care, dementia care, we still want to continue with our lives. We are not happy in an institutional hospital-like setting. So let's change that. And so we started with this change and innovation in a very ugly, old-fashioned building, a hospital-like building with a pilot, bringing back normal daily life in the institution. And many or almost all of those elements we tested in the pilot, a smaller group where you live in, bringing back normal daily life activities like cooking and walking to the supermarket and meeting people with the same interest in your club outside your house. All things you and I probably do daily, bringing that back for people living with advanced dementia and care needs, to offer them a much more normal life in this institutional setting. That pilot was such a success that after 10 years working in that ugly building with a lot of adjustments and refurbishments without spending a lot of money, we tested the whole approach, a normal life for people living with dementia, our vision. And based on that vision, we were able to build, construct our next step, our wish. We were able to tear down the old building and build on the same spot a neighborhood, because people don't live in a hospital-like building. People like to live in a neighborhood, in a normal house, in an even smaller group, 6-7 people, where they are supported by professionals to live as much as possible a normal life, where they are nudged to be engaged in normal daily life and be free to move around in the neighborhoods and make their own choices every day. That was the idea, and that idea became a much bigger success than we ever thought. And we could see that people with high complex care needs, because that's one of the misconceptions in the world, that people, because it looks so normal if you look at the pictures and if you walk around, you don't have the idea that you're walking through an institution, but the people that live in the Hokkawik need complex care. According our Dutch standards, it's complex care, it's nursing home care, but you don't get that feeling or impression when you walk around, and also not when you meet many of the residents outside. So the innovation is the humanizing dementia care in our Dutch healthcare system. So that became such a success that we inspired the Dutch colleagues in the Netherlands a lot. But nowadays, also internationally, many providers and people that want to improve, innovate dementia care.
Could you take me to the early days of this? In terms of that, you mentioned this very successful pilot.
Mm-hmm.
When you were designing that pilot, what were some of the hopes you mentioned? You wanted to turn it away from the typical institution type of feel.
Yeah.
What are some of the testimonies you got from people who were staying there that made you think and validated that this was a success?
So you imagine there was a ward with 33 people at a ward. What does it mean living or being in a group of 32 other people all day long, not leaving the ward, being sort of locked in? That has a huge impact on how you feel, how you act, maybe become depressive, or maybe you're confused, and you are living with a cognitive problem, dementia, and often other health issues. So we started to make smaller groups. 11 at that time, 30 years ago, 11. That was at that time a small group. Now I would say that's still a big group, but it was much smaller. And we matched people in that group of 11 according to their personal preferences, lifestyles, ideas in daily life and how you want to live together. And of course, everybody's still an individual, but by matching people according to their norms, values, preferences, you can prevent a lot of agitation, irritation, because you sort of share the same interest in music and meals. And we also brought back that rhythm where we invited residents to do something they still were able to do, while many people didn't realize that. If you go to an institution in the Netherlands or went, they said, please sit down, I take over your life, and you lose all your skills. And with the pilot, it became clear that people are less stressed, less agitated when they live in a group with like-minded people, that people were eating much better when there was a dinner prepared in front of their nose so they could smell, could understand that they are going to eat. They were sitting around the table with a normal table setting, more family-style dining. All those elements made that residents felt much more at home, less stressed, less agitated, more happy. And so that gave a lot of inspiration to continue with this model of support and care.
It's fascinating. And got a successful pilot, and then the vision gets bigger. At this stage of the journey, because bear in mind, I suppose at this stage, the concept dementia village was not really around at all. So it's something new.
True. And many, we didn't introduce the term dementia village, by the way. And so that's an important remark. And we are known as dementia village, and I use it nowadays. But with dementia village, you put the disease in the first words. While it should be about people first and not your disease. So somehow we are framed by media as dementia village. For many people, it has a positive connotation as an innovation. But we have mixed feelings about that. But I learned to accept that I would talk about dementia village. And so, yes, so nobody did this before. And many people in the Netherlands, my colleagues, were concerned because we were talking about a neighborhood. That means that if you step out your front door, you are outside on normal street pavement. Can very fragile old people with high care needs walk outside alone in a neighborhood? Many people were concerned. What happens when it's raining? What happens when it's winter? And so we showed the world, but first the Netherlands and the colleagues, that it's very good for old people to walk outside, to go on a walk, sort of to be relieved that you are outside, to train your muscles by walking around, to socialize, to meet other people on the street. So, but many, many people were very concerned. We were convinced that it could work because we had the experience, 10 years experience of the pilot, where people were walking already through the whole building. And that was at that time also unique.
As opposed to dementia village, what would you prefer this be called or known as by the media?
A neighborhood where people are living? and people with dementia are living.
Got it.
But to make sure that everybody understands what it is, and there are some misconceptions. Many people do not realize that the Hoogwijk is officially licensed as a skilled nursing home providing complex care. Some people thought that the Hoogwijk promotes that people with dementia just move to this dementia village to continue with their life. And of course, I am a fan of dementia-friendly communities, but I would say we have to make more dementia more dementia-friendly society. That's what we have to work on. And I know and I see daily that if it becomes way too complicated or maybe even unsafe to live in your own house, what we would prefer, then a move to a specific neighborhood can give enough comfort for the people with dementia to thrive in this special neighborhood for them.
And excuse the pun. I'm sure it takes a village to build a village like this. Could you speak to how partnerships were important to bring this vision to life? So in terms of thinking, even things like financing to regulatory, to working with the healthcare system, our audience is largely folks in Southeast Asia who are really fascinated by this model. And I think just understanding the power of partnerships and collaboration to make these big visions become a reality would be really powerful to hear.
Yeah, I have to disappoint you a little bit in this. When we developed the Hoogwijk, we were not really, I would not say really supported by the government or by the local government. The innovation came from a few people that wanted to push the bar much further. Innovation in general comes often from individuals that have a great idea and have the guts to test it or to put it in practice. And of course, we have a health inspector that had to sort of approve what we were doing or kept an eye on what we were doing. Of course, we have a local government that had to approve the way we designed our nursing home in a neighborhood shape. But I would not say that they supported the initiative or made it possible. They did what they had to do, and we had to talk with them, also with the fire department, for example, how to get the permits for the fire safety. So we were not, I didn't feel that we were really supported, but they are parties that you need when you make a project like this. Afterwards, when they saw what we were doing and when everybody could experience the outcomes while you walk around and see the impact of a neighborhood compared with an institutional setting, people became much more enthusiastic. And we inspired our colleagues to work in more small group home setting, for example, to open the doors internally, but also to the gardens. And we showed the world, and that's the emancipation of people with dementia, what people with dementia are still able to do, although they have high care needs. But we were not really supported by other parties. Right. And so if you look and if you want to bring this model to Asia or to another place, of course, you have to talk with all the stakeholders, the local government, investors, policymakers. But what I see and notice for the first 50 initiatives that we now see worldwide, that often leadership, transformal leadership, individuals that believe in this model, they start this initiative. And they have to work very hard to often convince others that this is a good model. And afterwards, they are all happy with the outcome.
Right. Shifting gears a bit, Eloy, do Do you mind taking me through the day of an average person living in the village? I know they all have different schedules and routines and whatnot, but do you mind just taking me through what the average person would do during a day?
Of course. And it's important. Your remark is very important. There are 188 people living in the Hogemijk, and they are all individuals. And that's a crucial element. We have to realize that they are all individuals. And so what goes wrong in traditional care is that they say, when you move in, you are all equal and the institution dictates what you should do during the day or how you are supported during your day and are fixed times, meal times, out of bed times. So that is the traditional model. So here, if you live here, and again, everybody has his own daily rhythm, you sleep in, you come out of your bed when you want to come out of your bed, you live in a house with six other people, they all have their own rhythm. There are care workers that support you in living your own day. So that's also important to realize that we are a care organization and all people need 24/7 care. But some people are very individual. They can come out of their bed on their own. Maybe they take a shower. Then they go from their own room to the living room where they will have breakfast. Let's say that you are up early, around 8 o'clock. You will have breakfast at the table. Maybe you can make your sandwich yourself. Maybe you need support. Maybe you even need support to get in your wheelchair. Depends in your abilities, disabilities. You sit at the table in the living room. The living room is a quite spacious space, decorated according to your preferred lifestyle. Let's say you are traditional, so it's a traditional interior, traditional pictures, wallpaper. And there is somebody, probably the home supporter in the living area that will help you with breakfast. You have your own breakfast. Maybe two or three other residents are still up. Maybe they all are still asleep. So it varies. You have your breakfast, a coffee, and as much as possible, you do it yourself. So you make your own sandwich. You can decide what you want to have on your sandwich. You finish breakfast. Maybe you go to your room for a moment, and then you decide to go on a walk. And let's say it's 9:30. So you leave your house, the door is open, you leave your house, you walk, you take a walk in the neighborhood, walks around, there's a boulevard, Pond Park, a bigger square, and you meet the other people that are up early at the Passage where you have a chat, you decide to go back home. You arrive 10:15, other people are awake, you drink a coffee, and then your music club starts at 11. So somebody will come to your house, pick you up. That somebody can be a volunteer or a club leader. They will guide you to your favorite club because you decided that that's your favorite hobby. You go to the classic music room and you will meet 12 other people there. All those other residents decided to be a member of that club on Tuesday morning. And so at 11, the club starts. Around 12, the club ends. You had a great time with other people that like classic music. And maybe you can walk back home. You are still able to find your way back home. So you walk and you will have lunch around 12:30 in your house with all the other residents. Most of the time, lunch is together. Breakfast, lunch, dinner gives structure to your day. After lunch, and that lunch is prepared by the home supporter, and probably something else is prepared, maybe a nice salad or maybe soup, but it's not your warm dinner. You take a nap, go back to your room, sit there, take a nap. And an hour later, you decided to go on a walk again. You go to the restaurant, meet some friends there, drink a beer, observe an aging group. that is guided by the founder, Eloy. They walk around, you're interested, you make a chat, you speak English. So you have a chat, that's possible. Or maybe you want to join, you walk with them, and you go back to your friends and observe what's happening. Maybe a family member will visit, you invite them for a drink, could be in the restaurant, but could also be at home. The family member decided, let's stay at the restaurant. So you have a drink, and then you go back home around 5, 5:30. You will help with the meal preparation, the care worker will cook, and you are able to peel the potatoes, your traditional Dutch, so you like potatoes, you help with the meal preparation. You set the table, you eat all together, and after dinner, it is maybe a Monday, you join the jazz cafe that starts at 7 in the cafe. So you leave your house again, go to the jazz cafe, and around 8:30 you are back. Time to watch television, maybe soccer. And around 10 or 10:30, you decide to go to bed. And so you are supported, maybe with your pajama, you brush your teeth, and you go to bed. Around 10:30, the care worker will leave. You know that you are alone in the house with all others, and you know that you can rely on the night team that will support you if needed. Most of the time, you have a good night's sleep, and around 8 o'clock, the next day starts again. Something like
Thank
that.
You. Thank you. Could you share how this differs depending on the stage of dementia people are in? Because yes. This is the progressive disease. So yes. How do you think about that evolution of your state and journey?
Also, that progression varies a lot. And there's also an important topic that we must discuss. What is a good day well lived? And what is a good day in this phase of life? This phase of life, meaning you are living with advanced dementia. And in the Netherlands and in the Hoogwijk, we have often, compared to other countries, a different and I would say innovative view on what is good clinical care in this phase of life. And so the goal is not to extend your life, no matter what, with all kind of interventions and treatment we can do today, but it's about quality of life and also accepting that people will pass away. So a lot of interventions, clinical interventions that are done in many countries also around us are not common in Dutch nursing homes. And that has a huge effect in how you experience your day, a day well lived, with less medical interventions, but more things you like to do, like music or walking or chatting. And it has also a huge effect in how many people are, in the end, bedridden and treated on bed for the whole day. And I meet many groups from Asia, and without blinking with their eyes, they can tell me that in the end stage, around 40, 50, 50% of their residents, patients, is bedridden and treated on bed. And that's something we really don't recognize here. On a day like today, maybe one or two residents are bedridden, and they will pass away within a few days. So we do not recognize that people are treated on bed for a very, very long period, only a short period. And that has to do with the effect that we allow people to die and we make sure they have a comfortable death. It's not euthanasia or assisted dying. No, it's about allowing a body that is shutting down to die. And before you are in that phase, so you're progressing your disease, it's still important that you are in a nice, comfortable environment in a small group, that you still can smell the meals, that you still are in an environment where there is your favorite music, where you can still do certain things. Yesterday, I was in a home where I was a person in a wheelchair folding the laundry at the high table. So you're still part of the household. of the group. And so you are always in the living area. If you want that, you can stay in your own room, of course, but people are engaged in daily life, also in the further progression of their disease. And yes, people in wheelchair, for example, are less mobile, and 40%, 40 of the residents has a wheelchair. But yesterday I could observe people wheeling themselves around at this moment, two residents outside, looking around, engaging with people. So a wheelchair is not a problem, and progressing further in your disease, then it's still important to have the right noises, smell, environment around you that supports you in who you are. So also, if you progress, the model, a smaller group, people living together, like-minded people, the good music, smell, meal, it's still important for people. Also, the possibility to go outside, maybe with a caregiver, maybe with a family member or volunteer, experiencing life although you are in a further stage of dementia, is still very important.
You're very interested in the family aspect, largely because I suppose family systems in Asia, Southeast Asia, it's still very much care is very much done in the household for the most part.
Yep.
Versus in care homes. It's been some of the feedback and testimonies from family or the visitors, because I can imagine it is a very, trying to think of the word, freeing experience.
A freeing experience?
But a freeing experience in the sense it's not an institution.
The
parents are staying in.
Yep. Yep.
Right? And that makes all the difference.
So first, an important remark made by you, how we look at what is necessary, what is good care, when can people stay at home, can I look after my mom? That's really context-based, society-based, country-based. So there are different views on how much energy you put in caring for your mom. What do you sacrifice in your own life to care for another one? What's common? So there are huge differences around the world. And also, so in the Netherlands, and not everybody realizes that. Listen, when is it still safe to live at home? When is it necessary to move to a nursing home, to move out of your own old house to a nursing home? For families, it's often a burden to care for their loved one. They are often concerned about safety, the risks, what might happen. And if you offer a Hogeweg concept, a neighborhood, for many family members nowadays, that's a nice choice because it feels a little bit more normal. They can see that with the 24/7 support and care in this neighborhood, mom or dad thrives, sometimes even becomes sort of better, but that's not really the case. Mom is supported really well, get back her autonomy, freedom, support 24/7. That makes that people feel a little bit less stressed, more comfortable here than at home. And also the family. So the burden of caring, the stress of caring, it's a relief. Many people have jobs, children, families to look after as well. So then it's nice that you know that mom is living in a neighborhood supported by professionals. And it's also nice to visit then because you can visit mom at home in her own house. You're welcome. It's a small group. And after a few visits, you get to know the others. It's not always happiness, of course. Like in normal families, there's also sometimes agitation. But you can also take mom out for a walk in the community, even outside the community. You can go to the restaurant to drink a coffee or even have lunch or dinner. And I see that happening with family that take out mom and have lunch together or dinner together. So it's a nice place to visit. It's not the institution where nobody wants to go to. And so for family, it makes it easier to visit. For children, it makes it easier. It's easier to bring your grandchildren, because it looks and feels like a normal little Dutch neighborhood. And so for family, there's a less burden. And yeah, that's a choice. But it's a choice. Are you still able to care and support your mom? And what are the risks of letting mom and dad living in the original community or their own house?
Before we head into the impact of this model, could you share about what has been the biggest challenge in bringing this to life?
The biggest challenge, you mean in the Netherlands to bring the model along?
Yes. Yes.
I think, like in many cases, the biggest challenge is that we want to move from a medical clinical model and a medical and clinical orientated society, where we look at people with dementia as patients and focus only on care, towards a social model of care, where we look at people and what is important in this phase of life. And that is the biggest challenge, because a lot is related to this move. We, you and I, and worldwide, we are living in a really medical-focused clinical society, and where we become more and more risk-averse, and somehow we think that it's safer to keep people in hospitals, keep people inside, in chairs, instead of allowing people to just be themselves and move around and focus on other aspects of life than only care. That is the biggest problem, and it's still a risk that the medical model will overtake the Hogeweg, although we do this already for so long. Because not all, only care workers, we are still medical oriented, but also society. And we don't talk enough, it's becoming better, about life and death. And we must accept that with living, there are also risks of dying or incidents. Also for people with dementia, and people with dementia are most of the time just people who also want to live and experience life and want to take the normal daily life risks. But in the medical model, we try to control everything, and that's impossible. So that's the biggest, one of the biggest gaps and differences. But we are learning, we in the society are learning to overcome that.
In switching then to opportunities, and the Hogeweg model has been replicated frequently in the last 10 years as well. Could you speak to some of the success stories, some of the learnings, and what has surprised you about people who've seen this model and then adapted it into their own markets?
Yeah, so I would say always that we inspired people. So it's not duplicated or replicated in that. But what can you learn from the Hogeweg model? The Hogeweg model is based on 7 pillars: a good surrounding, the way we look at health, life pleasures, lifestyles, social inclusion, emancipation, and how do we organize that? So and those pillars are an inspiration to change models around the world. And what you see is that dementia, the disease, is not making a difference around the world in what it does with people. So there is a demand worldwide, because the world is institutionalized in thinking. There's a demand to get away from that institutional model and thinking. And so what you can see is that our approach, the integral approach, and how we look at people with dementia, and how you can change that and innovate and provide a better day well lived for people with dementia and high care needs, that model works in every society. You have to adapt it to your culture, your thinking. For example, how do you think about clinical care? That care and what is good care is one of the topics. You have to adapt it. How people live in a house? How do you design a house? How do people live together? But we see that overall, people with dementia need an environment they understand. People need, they are not thriving well in institutional settings. People with dementia are more happy if you give them freedom, autonomy, if you respect them as an individual, and so on. So all those elements you can apply worldwide. And despite your financial model, because many providers first start to talk about money, it's not about the financial system. It's not even about your regulations. This thinking, humanizing the support and care for people with dementia, is applicable around the world. So we see initiatives in Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada, Europe, Norway, Italy, Spain, France, the UK. So you see initiatives popping up. They are all inspired by our work, but they are never the same. Some developers are able to bring the model a step further. They add certain elements that are good, and others make a step that is, for them, possible, because many visitors, and I provide a lot of study programs, they experience a gap in what they see here and what they think is possible in their own society or in their own mind. But it's growing, so we talk about a movement, a more human support and care approach in dementia care.
Thank you for that. Is there, you mentioned that developers that add certain thing and contextualize to their own market needs. Is there a specific case study you can point to or collaboration you can talk to that highlights that point?
If you look at the initiatives, they all, or most of them, have something that could be interesting. Some of the new neighborhoods or dementia villages have people with dementia and without dementia living together. So that's interesting. From an historical background, nursing homes in the Netherlands are focusing on certain groups, only people with dementia. But it's much more normal to live together with other people. In Norway, the initiatives in Norway have stairs in their village, public stairs. And that's interesting because many people worldwide think that people with dementia and stairs don't match. They see that as dangerous things, elements, while in all Norwegian initiatives, there are public stairs residents with advanced dementia use. So that's a great thing. The model in France, Village Landais, has some, I think, 10 sort of little apartments, hotel rooms, family, researchers, and visitors can use. So you can stay on site in the neighborhood. Others have an adult day center. Others add a center for people living with Parkinson. Others add other housing options. And that's what I promote as an advisor as well. Other housing options. The Hoogweg is based on group home living, a small group for 6-7 people. But we know, and I know, that not all people are social human beings and benefit from a group home. Most people do because it's a social group and you're nudged to be active and meet other people. But some people are so individual focused that they benefit from their own little apartment in a neighborhood like this. So these are all interesting elements you could add to your model. So you can be inspired by the Hoogweg, but the Hoogweg can innovate further. And as B-Advice advisors, because I'm now in an advisor position already for 10 years, still working at the Hoogweg, but I'm an advisor worldwide, we would try to explain to our clients what you can learn and how you can make maybe the better version of the Hoogweg 3.0 instead of the Hoogweg 1.0, that is, that you can experience here today.
That takes me nicely to my last question, Eloy. How can people reach out to you, learn more about your work, and if they wanted to explore collaborative opportunities, what's the best way to reach you?
Good question, Matthew. Thank you. So since 10 years, the Hogeweg has a separate advisory department where I work. I started that with my colleagues 10 years ago. So that department has a other name, B-Advice. And B-Advice, and you can find us at www.bethecareconcept.com. We have a separate website as well, but we are still part of the Hogeweg. So I'm employed by the same employer already for 23 years. You can reach out to us. You can reach out to me and ask your question. And then we will arrange a meeting, Zoom or Teams, where we will discuss your question, your requests. And it's important to mention that you can only visit the Hogeweg as a professional after making an appointment with us, be advised with me or my two other colleagues. So reach out to info@bethecareconcept.com and we will get in touch. You can also search on my name, Eloy van Hal, Eloy van Hel, and you will find me on internet and reach out. So you can just reach out and then we will discuss how we can help you to learn from the Hogeweg. Often we will offer you, and it's a paid visit, a study program. So not just a visit and looking around, no, a study program where we let you experience the Hogeweg and where we explain the model and discuss how you can bring this model to your country, your society, or your organization. So we offer all kinds of study programs on site at the Hogeweg, where you can learn much more and where you will be inspired, definitely.
Eloy, thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot. I'm sure the listeners will as well. Is there any thing I should have asked that I didn't ask that you want to leave as a final note to the audience?
I just want to encourage people, because I'm partly on a mission, to really think and realize that people with dementia are human beings and not patients all the time. So only 5% of the day people with dementia normally needs care support. So 95% of the day, they are human beings. And so we have to look with that view to people living with dementia. We have to accept the normal daily life risks. Everybody can have an incident. Don't worry too much and look at people with dementia as people. And if people need complex care, nursing home care, or maybe other sort of care, you might be inspired by the Hogeweg model in your thinking. But overall, thank you, Matthew, for this podcast interview. And if people are interested, just reach out to us, Be Advice, at www.bethecareconcept.com.
Great. Thanks, Eloy.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.